What happens when the people we trust most harbor the darkest secrets? In Paula Hawkins' latest psychological thriller, The Blue Hour, this question unravels against the backdrop of a remote tidal island where art, obsession, and violence intertwine with devastating consequences. Following the phenomenal success of The Girl on the Train, which sold over 23 million copies worldwide and was adapted into a major motion picture starring Emily Blunt, Hawkins continues to cement her reputation as the queen of psychological suspense. Stephen King himself praised her work as compulsively readable, while Gillian Flynn called her storytelling genuinely chilling. The Blue Hour has already been optioned for a limited series adaptation, with production set to begin next year. This meticulously crafted novel explores the blurred lines between creation and destruction, love and possession, in a story that will leave readers questioning how well they truly know those closest to them. James Becker has finally made it. After years of hard work and a bit of what he calls minor treachery, strategic networking, carefully timed favors, and the occasional blind eye turned to institutional politics, this working-class curator has secured a position at the prestigious Fairburn House, managing the artistic estate of renowned painter Vanessa Chapman. The position represents everything he's worked toward: prestige, financial security, and access to one of the most significant private collections in modern art. His carefully constructed life begins to unravel with a single phone call from the Tate Modern. Forensic anthropologists have identified what appears to be a human bone in Chapman's sculpture, Division 2. What should be a straightforward investigation quickly spirals into something far more sinister. The sculpture in question is a complex piece, combining ceramic, lacquer, gold leaf, bone, wood, and glass. Objects suspended by wires in a glass box that explore themes of inclusion and exclusion, and what we hide and what we reveal. The bone fragment, yellowed with age and partially obscured by layers of varnish, appears deliberately placed at the sculpture's center, like a dark secret hiding in plain sight. How fitting that this particular artwork would be the one to expose long-buried secrets, especially given Chapman's notorious reputation for embedding deeply personal symbolism in her work. Sebastian Ledix, heir to the Fairburn Foundation and Becker's boss, sees potential publicity value in the controversy. With his sharp business acumen and family's legacy to protect, he suggests leveraging the mystery to boost the collection's profile. Meanwhile, his pregnant wife, Helena, who happens to be Becker's former lover and Sebastian's ex-fiancée, suggests visiting Grace Haswell, Chapman's executor and longtime companion, to investigate further. The situation grows more complex when Helena raises a provocative connection. Could the bone be linked to Chapman's husband, Julian, who disappeared 20 years ago and whose body was never found? The timing matches perfectly with the sculpture's creation date, and rumors about Julian's volatile relationship with Chapman had long circulated in art world circles. The discovery sets in motion a chain of events that will force multiple characters to confront their darkest impulses and most carefully guarded secrets. As Becker digs deeper into Chapman's past, he uncovers a web of relationships far more complex and dangerous than he could have imagined. Affairs, betrayals, and possibly murder, all documented in subtle ways throughout Chapman's later works. What begins as a professional inquiry becomes a journey into the heart of human darkness, where art serves as both confession and concealment. The investigation forces Becker to question everything he thought he knew about Chapman's legacy, his own moral compromises, and the true cost of ambition in the cutthroat world of fine art. Vanessa Chapman was never an easy woman to know. Critics described her as tricky, disagreeable, impatient, sullen, strident, and single-minded, while praising her artistic brilliance. Through diary entries and memories, we discover a woman who fled the constraints of an unhappy marriage to create a sanctuary on Eris Island, a tidal island connected to the mainland by a causeway passable only 12 hours daily. "If I can't have it, I'm not sure my heart will take it," Vanessa wrote upon discovering the island property in a newspaper clipping. This remote location became her refuge and inspiration, where she could escape what she called the drudgery of domesticity and the violence of men. Here, she found freedom in isolation, writing that she loved the landscape's soft, rounded hills, so comforting, so female, the green and black and mysterious wood, and the chaos of the sea. The island transformed her art. After breaking her wrist in an accident, Vanessa began working with ceramics alongside her painting, finding liberation in this new medium. "I vibrate with joy at the prospect of creative freedom," she wrote. Her work grew more experimental and profound as she collected objects from the beach and woods, incorporating them into increasingly complex sculptures. But Aris Island was not just a place of creation. It was also where Vanessa's most troubling experiences unfolded. After her husband Julian disappeared during a visit to the island, suspicion fell on Vanessa. Despite police searches, only Julian's wallet was ever found, discovered in a fisherman's nets miles away. The mystery of his disappearance haunted Vanessa's later years and continues to shadow her legacy after her death. Through her diaries, we witness Vanessa's evolution from an ambitious young artist trapped in an unhappy marriage to a fiercely independent creator who found her voice in isolation. "I eat when I want, work when I want, move when I want," she wrote, answering to no one but the tide. Yet, this freedom came at a cost, as the island that liberated her also became the stage for violence, betrayal, and ultimately, her final days as cancer claimed her life. 5 years after Vanessa's death, Dr. Grace Haswell still lives on Aris Island, guarding the artist's legacy with fierce devotion. Short, stocky, and weathered by island life, Grace is nothing like the beautiful sylph Becker imagined as Vanessa's companion. Yet her connection to Vanessa transcended conventional relationships, neither simply friendship nor romance, but something profound that defied conventional labels. "My beloved," Grace thinks, "she was my beloved." When Becker arrives seeking information about the bone in Division 2, Grace initially responds with hostility, throwing him out and declaring the Fairburn Foundation doesn't deserve to display Vanessa's work. Her protectiveness stems from a deep well of trauma and complicated history with the artist. Through flashbacks, we learn that Grace first met Vanessa in 1998, when the artist arrived at her medical practice with a broken wrist. Their relationship deepened after Grace saved Vanessa from a violent attack by Stuart Cummins, a local mechanic. "I owe her my life. I owe her everything," Vanessa wrote afterward. Grace eventually moved to the island to support the traumatized Vanessa, beginning their two-decade relationship. But Grace harbors dark secrets that slowly unravel throughout the novel. Her relationship with Vanessa was marked by intense jealousy, particularly regarding Vanessa's ex-husband, Julian. When Julian returned to the island in 2002, Grace's resentment reached a breaking point. The truth about what happened during that visit and Julian's subsequent disappearance forms the novel's central mystery. Grace's character is defined by contradiction: a healer who has taken lives, a loyal companion who manipulated and controlled, a woman who saved others while harboring murderous impulses. Her confession to Becker reveals the chilling justification for her actions. "I've saved countless lives. One life can't be weighed against another." This rationalization exposes the dangerous moral calculus that allows her to view herself as ultimately good despite her crimes. Perhaps most disturbing is Grace's inability to fully recognize her own monstrosity. She sees herself as conscientious, hardworking, doctor, friend. The word killer seems absurd to her, even as she acknowledges having taken multiple lives. This cognitive dissonance makes her one of contemporary fiction's most unsettling characters, a woman whose nurturing exterior masks a capacity for calculated violence when she feels threatened or rejected. James Becker's journey from working-class outsider to curator at prestigious Fairburn House came at a significant cost. His rise involved what he calls only a minor bit of treachery, pursuing Helena while she was engaged to Sebastian Lennox, the heir to Fairburn. This complicated triangle forms the backdrop against which the investigation unfolds. Becker's position is precarious in every sense. Professionally, he walks a tightrope between Sebastian's commercial interests and his own artistic integrity. Personally, his marriage to Helena exists in the shadow of her previous engagement, with Sebastian remaining uncomfortably present in their lives. Even their living arrangement, residing in the Gamekeeper's Lodge on Fairburn property, underscores their dependence on Sebastian's goodwill. This precariousness extends to Becker's investigation of the bone in Division 2. As he grows closer to Grace and more invested in understanding Vanessa's life, his loyalties become increasingly divided. His genuine appreciation for Vanessa's art, inspired by his late mother's ownership of a small Chapman painting that comforted her until her death, conflicts with the Fairburn Foundation's more mercenary approach to her legacy. Becker's vulnerability becomes literal when Helena experiences pregnancy complications while he's stranded on Eris Island. His absence during this crisis forces him to rely on Sebastian to care for Helena, reinforcing his outsider status and dependence on the very man whose fiancé he stole. The scene of Becker entering the hospital to find Sebastian holding Helena's hand crystallizes his insecurity. It was as if he had entered an alternate reality where Helena had married wealthy, aristocratic Sebastian Lennox instead of him. As Becker uncovers more about Vanessa's life and Grace's secrets, he faces impossible ethical dilemmas. Should he report what he learns about Julian's disappearance, potentially destroying Vanessa's artistic legacy? Can he trust Grace's version of events, or is she manipulating him? His position as both insider and outsider, to the art world, to the Lennox family, and ultimately to the truth about what happened on Eris Island, makes him the perfect witness to the unfolding tragedy. The Blue Hour explores how past violence shapes present reality, with each character carrying wounds that influence their actions in ways they may not fully comprehend. The novel's title refers to L'heure entre loup et chat, the hour between wolf and dog when appearances deceive, suggesting the blurred line between civilization and savagery that runs through the story. Vanessa's diary entries reveal a history of emotional abuse from Julian, who exploited her financially and psychologically. Part of me wants him to go and never come back. Part of me wants to lock him in a room and never let him out, she wrote, capturing her conflicted feelings. When Julian destroyed all her artwork intended for an important exhibition, it represented the ultimate violation, an attack not just on her creations, but on her identity as an artist. Grace's trauma runs even deeper. As a child, she experienced the severing and reattachment of a fingertip, leaving her with an inexplicable fear that her parents had been replaced by imposters. This early experience of dissociation and paranoia shaped her attachment patterns throughout life. Her most profound betrayal came when her university friends Nicholas Riley and Audrey abandoned her during a serious illness, disappearing without explanation and taking their belongings. Even secondary characters carry significant trauma. Lady Emmeline Lennox suffers from PTSD following her husband's shooting death, an accident officially blamed on the Gamekeeper to spare her reputation. Marguerite Cummins endured years of domestic abuse from her husband Stuart, who later attacked Vanessa, and now suffers from advancing dementia that leaves her perpetually watching from windows for his return. The landscape itself bears the scars of violent history. Grace reveals that hundreds of years ago, villagers buried their dead on Eris Island to protect them from wolves, a chilling parallel to the modern bodies hidden there. Storms have reshaped the island, leaving physical markers that mirror the psychological damage inflicted on its inhabitants. As Grace observes, violations permanently taint beautiful places. The place is changed, and you are changed, and neither for the better. Throughout The Blue Hour, art serves as both confession and concealment, revealing truths that characters cannot or will not express directly. Vanessa's artistic journey traces a dramatic evolution, from conventional oil paintings of landscapes and portraits to increasingly complex mixed-media sculptures that incorporate found objects, shells, driftwood, animal bones, and eventually human remains from the island. This transformation mirrors her psychological journey from constraint to freedom, from suppression to expression, reflecting how art becomes her primary means of processing trauma and hidden truths. The most significant artworks in the novel are Vanessa's mysterious black paintings, particularly one depicting what she called the man in the doorway, a sinister smiling figure that haunted her dreams and appeared repeatedly in her work. This disturbing canvas, which Becker discovers in Fairburn House at dawn, represents Vanessa's externalization of her deepest fears and memories. Like Goya's famous black paintings created during his period of illness and disillusionment, Vanessa's darkest works emerged from her most troubled times, characterized by heavy impasto technique and a restricted palette of blacks, grays, and deep blues that suggest both concealment and revelation. Love, the painting Grace shows Becker near the novel's end, serves as perhaps the most crucial artistic confession. This dark work depicts three figures in a nocturnal scene, one prone on the ground, another kneeling beside them, and a third watching from the shadows. Grace claims it documents her attacking Stuart Cummins while Vanessa observed, but the painting's deliberate ambiguity suggests it might represent Julian's murder instead. The composition's triangular arrangement creates a sense of tension and inevitability, while the thick, violent brushstrokes convey emotional turbulence. Vanessa's decision to title this violent scene Love reveals her complex understanding that devotion and destruction can be inextricably linked, that sometimes the deepest acts of love can manifest as violence. Totem, Vanessa's portrait of Grace holding a wooden bird, represents another form of confession through its departure from conventional portraiture. Though Grace is not conventionally beautiful, Vanessa renders her majestic and noble in the painting, suggesting she saw beyond physical appearance to capture Grace's essential strength and protective nature. The wooden bird from the painting becomes a powerful symbolic object connecting the women throughout their lives. With Vanessa Kelling Grace, it connects us forever. The painting's warm earth tones and vertical composition emphasizes Grace's grounding presence in Vanessa's life. The sculpture Division 2 that contains the human bone functions as the ultimate confession, a literal incorporation of violence into art that cannot be ignored or denied. Whether Vanessa knew the bone's human origin remains deliberately ambiguous, but its presence in her work ensures that the truth eventually emerges, just as the epigraph from Dylan Thomas suggests, "And death shall have no dominion." The sculpture's incorporation of organic materials, including the bone, speaks to themes of decay, preservation, and the way art can both reveal and transform dark truths into objects of beauty and contemplation.
Eris Island functions as more than setting. It becomes a character in its own right, shaping the lives and psyches of those who inhabit it. Named after the Greek goddess of discord and strife, the island lives up to its mythological associations by fostering both creation and destruction. The island's tidal nature, connected to the mainland by a causeway passable only 12 hours daily, creates a physical isolation that mirrors the psychological isolation of its inhabitants. Grace describes herself as having become tidal after 20 years on Eris Island, waking with the rhythm of the sea. This connection to natural cycles represents both freedom from social constraints and vulnerability to elemental forces. Vanessa's diaries reveal her profound connection to the landscape. I eat when I want, work when I want, move when I want, answering to no one but the tide. The island provides her the autonomy she craved after escaping her controlling marriage, allowing her art to flourish in ways impossible in her previous life. Yet this same isolation enables violence to occur unwitnessed and bodies to remain hidden for decades. The island's geography creates natural spaces for concealment, woods where bones can be buried, a septic tank where Julian's body is hidden, a priest hole where disturbing paintings can be stored. These physical hiding places parallel the psychological compartmentalization that allows characters to justify or deny their darkest actions. Weather plays a crucial role in the island's character, with storms repeatedly marking turning points in the narrative. The storm that strands Becker on the island with Grace forces their final confrontation, while earlier storms concealed evidence of Nicholas Riley's murder and temporarily cut off access to the island after Julian's death. As Grace observes, storms changed the island, leaving scars, just as people carry marks from life's turning points. In her final diary entry, Vanessa contemplates the island's eventual fate. One day, not so far in the future, the sea will rise and Eris will be submerged. This prediction of environmental change mirrors the novel's theme of buried truths eventually surfacing, suggesting that neither nature nor human nature can be permanently concealed. At its core, The Blue Hour explores how ordinary people justify extraordinary evil. Grace's chilling rationalization for multiple murders reveals the dangerous moral calculus that allows seemingly normal individuals to commit horrific acts while maintaining a positive self-image. "I've saved countless lives," Grace tells Becker, arguing that her good deeds as a doctor outweigh her crimes. When Becker protests that one life can't be weighed against another, Grace firmly disagrees. This utilitarian approach to human value allows her to view herself as ultimately virtuous despite having taken at least three lives. Grace's justifications evolve throughout her confessions. Nicholas Riley's murder is framed as self-defense against his threatening behavior, though she acknowledges the killing wasn't exactly an accident. Julian's murder is protection of Vanessa and Marguerite from a dangerous man. Even her assistance in Vanessa's suicide during her final cancer battle is presented as an act of mercy. Most disturbing is Grace's inability to fully recognize her own monstrosity. She sees herself as conscientious, hardworking, doctor, friend. The word killer seems absurd to her, even as she acknowledges, "Kill three, and that makes you a serial killer." This cognitive dissonance allows her to maintain her self-image as fundamentally good while committing increasingly calculated acts of violence. The novel also explores how trauma can distort moral reasoning. Grace's childhood experience of having her fingertips severed and reattached left her questioning her attachment patterns and experiencing emotions differently than others. Her abandonment by friends during serious illness created a profound fear of rejection that manifests as possessive violence when she feels threatened. These experiences don't excuse her actions, but help explain how ordinary psychological wounds can, under specific circumstances, create the conditions for extraordinary evil. Through Grace's character, Hawkins forces readers to confront uncomfortable questions. How much can we forgive in the name of love or protection? Where is the line between justice and revenge? And perhaps most disturbingly, how close might any of us be to crossing similar moral boundaries under the right circumstances? The Blue Hour concludes with a meditation on what survives after death, both literally and figuratively. In her final diary entry, Vanessa contemplates her mortality after receiving her cancer diagnosis. "Part of me thinks, what does it matter? When you're gone, you're gone." Yet she ultimately concludes that legacy does matter, the art you made or the people, the friends you loved, the good you did, the bad. This reflection on legacy resonates throughout the novel's exploration of art as both expression and preservation. Vanessa's paintings and sculptures survive her, continuing to speak truths she could not articulate directly in life. The bone in Division 2 ensures that even Nicholas Riley's death will eventually be discovered, providing his family the closure they were denied for decades. Memory serves as another form of survival, though the novel demonstrates how unreliable and selective human recollection can be. Grace's memories of killing Nicholas Riley remain dreamlike and fragmented, a beautiful day with sandwiches and handholding that somehow ended with her alone, filthy and frightened. The transition between these states remains largely blank except for flashes of his mocking voice and the feeling of crushing his fingers beneath her boot. Water, specifically the rising tide, becomes a powerful metaphor for forces that both conceal and reveal. The tidal nature of Eris Island creates temporary isolation that enables violence, yet the same waters eventually expose buried secrets. Julian's wallet is found in a fisherman's net, and Becker's final moments occur as water fills his car on the submerged causeway. Vanessa's prediction that the sea will rise and Eris will be submerged suggests that natural forces will ultimately reclaim human constructions, both physical and psychological. In the novel's devastating conclusion, Becker becomes the final victim of Grace's determination to protect her secrets. As hypothermia sets in during his attempted escape across the flooded causeway, his mind wanders to Goya's black paintings, comparing himself to the drowning dog struggling to keep its head above water. His thoughts of Helena and their unborn child in his final moments underscore the novel's most tragic theme, how violence creates ripples of loss that extend far beyond its immediate victims.